everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Continuing Pride Month. It's 2002's... Yep, I got it right. 2002's Beat It Like Beckham and 2009? 2009 Whip It.
So you may notice that neither of these movies are actually a gay movie.
But they should have been.
They absolutely should have been. And I think that any queer people listening to this will agree with us that these are very, I will say, queer-coded movies, whether intentionally or unintentionally.
It's also focusing around two sports that are dominated by LGBT people.
Say that, and I thought that, but then I looked into it, and someone has done a study of roller derby, and only 24% of the women are gay. But that does compare to, I think 5% of the general population being queer. Yeah. So 24% is still high, but, I did think it would be 80% queer people in roller derby.
What about football?
I didn't look into the stats of that.
Okay.
But I do feel like most of what I hear about women's football, and this is for Americans, soccer we're talking about, not American football, they all seem to be married to each other. They all seem to be always getting engaged to their opponents and things like that. That just seems to be the news that you hear about women's football, is that they're all marrying each other all the time.
Love can bloom on the battlefield.
Yes. So I do think that both sports have probably higher percentages of queer people on their teams than in the general populace.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. Both of these movies, the reason we picked them is because the male love interest to the main character is just the most generic, brown-haired, white guy bullshit that didn't need to exist in the film.
When we watched... Actually, I don't think I took down either of their names, because I think for Bend It Like Beckham, I consistently refer to him as Coach,
yeah.
And for the other one, I consistently refer to him as Bland Guy.
Yeah.
They really feel like one-dimensional, but she likes dudes. Like, that. Their whole purpose is to be like, yeah, but she likes men, definitely, yeah. For real, and not this, like... I mean, here's the thing. I may be biased as a queer person, but I was thinking this the whole way through Whip It, and it's totally true for Bend It Like Beckham as well. If I was hanging out all the time, I don't understand. I don't think you can be a straight girl who is spending all of your time with either Keira Knightley or Alia Shawkat. I think just being in the presence of either of those people will make you at least a little bi.
It's interesting because Whip It stars Elliot Page, and
it's directed by
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore is bi. Yeah. Alia Shawkat is bi. Elliot Page is originally came out as lesbian, is now out as transmasculine. I feel like there's other people. I was so surprised to find out that Juliette Lewis is not gay.
Yeah.
Juliette Lewis has such queer energy for me, and she's said she's been talked about this in interviews, which is how I know for sure that, you know, she identifies as straight. And she's like, yeah, I think it's fun that people think this about me. I think it's like Natasha Lyonne. Natasha Lyonne, I think, is straight, which is crazy because she also has just very queer energy about her.
Yeah.
But it's just these women who are very empowered and feminist without being overly feminine, I think, yeah. Gives this kind of vibe.
So, yes, two movies about sports. Mm-hmm.
And also, by the way, Keira Knightley has said that she thinks Bend It Like Beckham should have ended with the two of them getting together.
100%.
Yeah.
That was where it was going. the entire movie. It's just this weird, because the coach character in that movie is just, both of the characters are just generic white guys, brown hair, high cheekbones. They both have fuckboy face.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just like, it could have easily been a chick bass player in the band, and, like, it would have been, like, hinted, and then it would have, you know, Keira Knightley at the end, and it would have been, like, you know, it's... Are we queer coding these movies from what they're... But that, like, but the potential was there, and it just feels like how to be more commercially...
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, run of the mill.
To the point that in Bandit Like Beckham, there is an entire secondary storyline around Jules, who is Keira Knightley's character's mother, overhearing an argument between Jules and Jess,
yeah,
and thinking that they were in a relationship and have broken up,
yeah,
and assuming that her daughter is a lesbian,
yeah,
and like trying to come to terms with that and being like, you know, the most it's very funny the way it goes about, because it is very much that like, am I an ally? How do I be an ally? Like, let me consider. Like, I haven't ever tried to consider my thoughts on what being gay, of what would happen if my daughter was gay. And it's the like, they were so mean to George Michael, you know? And the dad being reassuring her, being like, no, but you still listen to Wham, so like, yeah, you're okay.
It's also the fact that like Bliss, Elliot Page's character, is very much like being shoeboxed by her mother, mm-hmm, into this very she literally calls her out on it, 1950s, mm-hmm, ideal of like beauty pageants, get a husband, you won't go to college, you know, you're just a vessel for some other man to have children with.
Yeah, and it's very much about performative femininity.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about Whippet is, by the way, guys, this episode, obviously, you can tell, has already gone off the rails. I don't think we're going to do a play-by-play of the movies, but we might. But very much, I think, in Whippet, the roller derby is also performative femininity, but a totally different view of what femininity is.
It's very, like, the rewatching, because I've got Whippet on DVD, and, mm-hmm, I've watched it. You know, did you know, here's an interesting fun fact about me.
Ooh.
I used to frequent the roller derby in Wellington all the time.
Oh, yeah?
I think for, like, an entire year, I went to, like, every match.
We should go to roller derby together.
Is it still in the TSB Arena?
I don't know. I would watch it, though.
We should do it.
Absolutely. I don't think I could ever perform in roller derby.
I think the problem is it's Saturday nights.
Oh, okay. So we're not free.
Yeah.
We can look into it.
Yeah, we should definitely look into it.
Because I think that is a sport I would genuinely enjoy watching.
Yeah, because it's a vibe.
Yeah,
it's
a whole vibe. Yeah.
And
also, just very queer energy. Yeah. And very inclusive and accepting.
The one thing I will say is the ramp isn't elevated, and I don't know if they did that for the movie.
Right.
Because that is very much like a completely different track, but then I have no idea.
I will say that the person who wrote... both the screenplay and the book it was based on, she wrote them at the same time, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Is someone who was on a roller derby team, and this is based on, you know, it's like a fictionalized version of the roller derby team she was on.
Right.
So I would imagine she was consulting on that kind of stuff, so it might be that the roller derbies she was on were elevated like that.
Yeah. Wow, there's a lot of roller derby. There is 4,700 clubs. That's awesome.
In New Zealand or across the world?
No, just across the world.
Oh, okay.
There's 1,250 in the States as of this Wikipedia article.
Yeah, there was a big revival in the 2000s, I think, and then this obviously came out during that or you know, in the midst of the revival, which was largely, from what I can tell, predominantly led by queer people.
Yeah. I have a roller derby book. And I won that at a life drawing contest.
You have a roller? What do you mean a roller derby book?
A book about roller derby.
But like a story,
it's like very comic pulp. It's in the bookcase.
What's it called?
I don't remember.
It's not Derby Girl or Roller Derby.
No,
Girl,
no, no. It's like a history. It's a history. Oh, book.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, I won it by having the best tattoo design for roller derby people. Which was literally just a flaming wheel that said, Live by the Skate, Die by the Skate. And I got the book, which, because mine was the best.
That's cool.
Yeah, fun facts about me, like a decade ago. when I was cool and didn't sit in a room making a podcast.
Nick, back in his 20s.
Yeah.
That's cool.
These movies are both fun. Both clearly could be queer.
Yeah.
I was going to say queerly.
Queerly could be queer.
Yeah.
And also, like, even whip at the fact that Bliss gets these, like, strong female role models. And, you know, and she does see her mother as a role model, but just doesn't want to be like her in the way her mother wants her to be like her. Like, she wants to be like her in her, like, passion and determination and stuff like that, but doesn't want to do the exact same things. But she gets these role models in the form of the Hurl Scouts, who are the team that she joins up with. Mm. And that, like, you know, it makes sense. This, like, it would make total sense for me for this to be a story about a 17-year-old who's felt out of place in all this performative femininity.
Yeah.
In this rural town in Texas, and then she goes to this place with all these queer women and is like, oh, this is where I belong. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like that's what the story is, but then it's never explicitly stated that anyone is queer. You know, Smashley Simpson, who is Drew Barrymore's character, is engaged to a man. Doesn't mean she's not queer, because Drew Barrymore herself is bisexual. Maggie Mayhem, is that the name of the character? Maggie Mayhem, who's Kristen Wiig's character, has a kid and stuff like that, and it's showing that there's these other ways to be a woman, and I think that's kind of the message it's going for, but, like, it could just as easily be, like, you know, that she's realizing that the reason she didn't fit in is because she is queer.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that probably is the story for some people in roller derby, that they go in and into this inclusive space and then suddenly realize it's okay to be who they are or realize who they are if they haven't, you know, considered it. So I think Whippet could so easily have been a movie about, like, realizing that you're queer.
There's a lot of culture backlash in both these movies. There's a lot of, like, traditional family values that there's sort of the characters are rebelling against. With Bennett, like, Beckham, obviously you've got a very strong Indian culture that's sort of, like, very traditional, and to the point where, like, her decisions to play football have sort of, like, impacted the entire family right across the board.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stigma from the parents. There's a lot of held sort of, like, trauma that they've, like, shoved down. Mm. And it's very interesting because, obviously, as two people who aren't from this culture, it is very fascinating to watch, like, the ramifications. And it's also the fact that, the small town where she's from in Texas isn't real, but it does have that very Texas vibe with Bliss just, like, there's nothing in this town. We have to do really well at school to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And you the other side, you get, like, you know, they're English, they're in England, immigrants, you know, like, it's very interesting having, like, being the there's a lot of pressure being a second generation immigrant, because standardly when your parents arrive, especially older now, it's a little bit different now, but, like, when, you know, developing countries have bigger tech industries, more recognized, you know, there are lots of reasons why you could be wealthy and immigrate.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the time where these movies are set, we're in the era where the children would be the age they are and when the movies are set in.
Yeah.
You're usually immigrating to make money. You move to another country because your economic ideals are not equal to where you were born. Mm. And this is, you know, the story of the Irish, for an example.
Which is...
abandoning your homeland and taking it with you because either, you know, the British are trying to kill you or... you know, other reasons.
It's also why kill each other. It is why the coach character is Irish in the movie, because he was written as an English character.
Yeah.
And then I think Jonathan Rhys-Meyers was cast as him doing an English accent, but then he was like, you know, actually, you know, we could have this camaraderie over, you know, because at one point she gets called a racial slur.
Yeah.
And she's like, you wouldn't understand. And he's like, I'm Irish living in England. Yeah. Like, of course I understand. You know, and it's not quite the same. But that's why that character, why they made the change to be like, actually, yeah, you can use your natural accent. You can be an Irish character, because then we can add this layer of, you know, camaraderie between these characters. This layer of understanding that you wouldn't get if he just was an English guy, you know.
Yeah. And as the saying goes, tradition is just peer pressure from dead people.
It's so strange, because obviously in the movie they're like, they're practicing Sikhs, and they're part of this large Sikh Indian community in London, I guess. Is it London?
I don't know, because they take the metro into what looks like the London CBD, so they could be...
Yeah, but London is, like, massive. Yeah. It's crazy. So I think they are in London, but not in, like, central London.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's, like, a moment where she's hanging out
with... Hounslow. So, yeah, it is. It's outside, but it is London.
Right. So she's hanging out with, Jess is hanging out with Jules, and they like hug or whatever, they're, you know, doing something, and a car drives by, and it's the, Jess's sister is engaged, and they're in the process of planning this whole wedding, and it's the soon-to-be in-laws who are driving by, and they think, because Jules has short hair, they think she's a boy, and they mistakenly think they see them kissing.
Mm.
And then they show up at the family home to be like, no, your other daughter was kissing a white boy and therefore we're calling off the wedding.
Yeah.
And it's like, just...
you're not the family we thought you were.
Yeah, it's just this extreme of like, if you don't conform to these rules, like your whole family gets ostracized. And, you know, and there's a mention of it earlier in the film where they talk about a cousin, I think, that they, or someone else in the community who... went and married a white man, and her mother is no longer allowed in the temple. And it's just like, wow, okay.
It's also very interesting because a lot of the pressure is coming from the mum in both movies.
Yeah.
And the dad is the one that becomes the more supportive and the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Which I feel is more along the lines of, if you switch these movies around, gender switch these movies, right?
Yeah.
So you had a guy, young man trying to do a feminine, like ballet.
Yeah, like ballet, something or figure skating, something like that,
Which I think's the plot of, is it Billy Elliot, the one where his dad wants him to be a boxer?
Right, he wants to be a dancer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was like researching stuff for those people were comparing Whippet to... They were like, we think you should... Or there was like a critic review from the time that it came out saying, like, it's a good film. You know, even if you have already seen similar films like Billy Elliot and Bend It Like Beckham, you should still go see this. So that was fun that that goes...
Because if you had it that way, the father would be the one... Like, when writing it, because it basically writes itself, the father would be like, no, you're not doing that, blah, blah, blah.
You're
going to, you know, rugby practice, or you're going to boxing practice, or whatever. And then the mum, like, being meek and in the corner, being, like, not trying to live their own life and trying, you know... Because the dad is doing that, and definitely in Whippet, of, like, the lying about leaving work early and coming home late so he can hide in his car and watch football left alone. It is little snapshots of that moments in the movie that like really like actually print out the characters as being actual characters and not just like stereotypes. But I just definitely feel like there is a definite connection between fathers and daughters and sons and mothers, where they're more focused on as long as you're happy kind of material. Mm-hmm. Where the opposite is more about traditions, because it's like that's what's hammered home, and I think that's just ongoing everywhere. sons get on far closer with mothers and, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in a family where my dad was not pressuring anyone to play any kind of sport. So I don't relate.
I don't know. He puts a lot of pressure on you to play Pokemon Go.
My dad just wanted us all to do well in maths in school.
Yeah.
That was, I grew up with nerd dad.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. Yeah, but it is definitely like a stereotype thing that you see. And you do, like, I have run into, you know, people that I know who have had that pressure from family members. I do think in the cases of these movies, it's very much about femininity.
Yeah.
It's about the performing and the stereotypical role of being, and in fairness to the mother in Whippet, she very much is, she's not entirely, like, she does want, you know, Bliss to conform in a way that Bliss doesn't want to conform. But she also was saying, like, you know, it's important to be smart and to have goals that way. So she's not being like, you give up everything and just go be with a guy. But she wants her to be in these, you know, this debutante kind of situation and do these pageants. And she, you know, and she does have a younger sister who is very feminine and loves being in the pageants, and then it's,
you does know, really well in them.
And then you see, like, even it's very, you know, it, they do it very well with the cinematography or just this, the stage direction, I guess, where they always have Bliss in the back seat of the car and the mother bonding with the younger daughter in the front. And it's this, like, there's a physical divide between them where Bliss is there seeing how much the mother and the sister get on and how much they have in common and how she feels separate from them. But in Bend It Like Beckham, it's very much, you know, kind of put through as cultural norms as well, that it's the mother wants her to be, you know, this desirable bride, essentially. You know, and I think in both movies, they're supposed to be about 17. And she's
18, 17.
18 in Bend It Like Beckham?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah, true, because she's going off to, she's done her A-levels and everything, she's planning to go to uni.
Yeah.
There's very much, like, she wants her to be feminine, she wants her to learn how to cook, she's trying to teach her how to cook an aloo gobi.
Yeah.
You know, she wants her to be able to do all these traditional cultural things, which do play into this role of femininity, but for the mother, it's, I think, less about the femininity and more about respecting and upholding their culture. And for Jess, it feels very much like she's being forced into this feminine box when she wants to be out playing football with her male friends.
Yeah.
And then discovers that, you know, there's an opportunity for her to play football with other women who are like-minded and also, like, really are into the sport.
Sorry, I'm just blown away again by the cast of Whippet.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You got Elliot Page, you got Daniel Stern, Jimmy Fallon's in there, which I'd completely forgotten about. Kristen Wiig, Zoe Bell, if you don't know who Zoe Bell is, a very famous New Zealand stunt actor. She was the body double for a lot of the stunts in Kill Bill.
There's also the Manson sisters on the team are played by Rachel Piplica and Kristen Adolfi, who were from the Los Angeles Derby Dolls. So they are real derby players. They skate on the Hurl Scouts team in the film, but in real life they skate for a team called the Tough Cookies, which is the team that the Hurl Scouts were based on.
Right.
And not only that, so Kristen Adolfi's derby name is Chrissy Crash, and Rachel Piplica's derby name is Iron Maven, which is the name of one of the characters in the film, played by Juliette Lewis. Yeah.
We also found out, not that it was like a hidden thing, but we didn't know, Andrew Wilson, the older brother of Owen and Luke.
Yeah.
Because you were like halfway through the movie.
I've seen this movie multiple times before, but I never thought about it. And we were just watching it, and because I guess probably other times I've watched this movie has probably been like on a laptop or whatever. So I had better sound in how we were watching it this time. And he was just giving like a talk at some point, and I was like, why does he sound so much like Owen Wilson? I was like, he sounds like the Wilson brothers. And I said, I bet he's a secret third Wilson brother. And then I looked him up and I was like, holy shit. He's a third Wilson brother, and he's their older brother. And I just didn't know he existed. So that was a fun little thing. What's really funny is that earlier today I got a reel on Instagram recommended to me that was Drew Barrymore and Kate Hudson talking to each other about how they both used to date Wilson brothers.
Yeah.
Because Drew Barrymore previously dated Luke Wilson and Kate Hudson had dated Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
But like, that means that Drew Barrymore in her directorial debut cast her ex's older brother as her coach. She feels a bit strange.
Drew Barrymore's character in that movie is great.
Yeah, it's very funny. Of all the characters in that movie to cast yourself as, yeah, it's very funny.
It's most directors who do that are obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was nice, sort of like, because it sort of builds that teamwork as well. Like, I don't know, I've never been on that seat. So, I don't know what you sort of like, cool, you're my friend, but you're doing shit. No, you should do better.
I feel like they all were good at Derby, though, as well. Yeah, but yeah. Then again, I don't know how much of it was them doing it and how much of it was
staged
or like stunt people and things like that. I will say, because I've already gone through most of my trivia already, so I might as well get to this now as well. For Bendit Like Beckham, they did get in. Where was it? They got in someone to train them. Have I not taken this down? Maybe I didn't take this down.
I just found a really weird fact.
Okay.
while you try and find that fact you're looking up, I just read, to mark the 10th anniversary of North Korean's relations with the United Kingdom, an edited version of Bend It Like Beckham was broadcast on North Korean state television.
The first Western film to be shown on North Korean television. Isn't that weird? Isn't that very strange? I don't know what I did with this thing, because it's not in my... Oh, no, here it is. Okay. I was like, what's going on? So they were coached by... Simon Clifford coached the actresses in football.
Right.
He runs a Brazilian soccer school. And they did 3 months of training. And he said, if Keira Knightley had started training at a younger age, she could have played football professionally.
Wow.
She was good enough to be a pro player.
But sorry, I just...
You're getting into the North Korean stuff more?
No, I found it was like even more bizarre. So it is the highest grossing football sports film.
It's not anymore.
Yeah, but then I went into the highest grossing and I was like, highest grossing sports films, right? Mm-hmm. Inside Out 2.
Oh yeah, she's a hockey player.
Yep. And then it's Furious 7. Fate of the Furious, Fast and Furious, F9, Fast X, and it's all auto racing.
Right.
I don't think they're doing any form of racing in the last, like, they're like shooting satellites at things. And
I will say that Bend It Like Beckham has been beaten out. It's still, as far as I'm aware, to this day, it's still the third highest grossing football or like soccer film. And the top two are, I think, a film called Kicking and Screaming, which is a Judd Apatow, Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah.
And She's the Man, which is another movie that we possibly could have compared these with, especially since she does, like, cross-dress for most of the movie.
Yeah.
So also keep going into the queerness, and is, her mother is pushing her into pageants and to being a debutante, and then she's on the side doing football.
Do you want to know what number 7 on this list is?
What?
It's Forrest Gump.
Is that a sports movie?
American football / ping pong.
Oh my god.
Then it's back to more audio racing.
Auto
racing.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what 12 is?
Sure.
Gladiatorial combat is a sport.
Is it gladiator?
It's gladiator. Whoever made this list is reaching.
That's funny.
What the hell?
Okay.
I'm just gonna have to stop because
I'm just gonna go through this whole list.
Triple X number 26, extreme sports.
Okay.
I'm gonna go back to wherever the original thing was. There we go.
You've just gone down a weird rabbit hole. Yeah, a
weird rabbit hole of Wikipedia.
Anyway, the point is that Keira Knightley could have been a soccer player.
100%.
She could have been a football player. Which is kind of fun. She also just seems to, like, Keira Knightley is like a prodigy. People don't talk about that enough. Because in this movie, so you're saying they're supposed to be 18?
Yeah.
What age do you think the two lead actresses are?
Probably younger. Or are they older? I don't even know.
So, sorry. Parminder Nagra, who plays Jess, was 26 when they were filming. Keira Knightley was 16.
Wow. Yeah, wasn't she way too young to be in a certain movie?
Is it Love Actually?
Love
Actually is weird because people always bring it up because they look at Thomas Brodie Sangster, who is 14 and looks about 5.
Yeah.
And then Keira Knightley, who looks like she's in her mid-20s, but she was 18.
Yeah.
So there's like 4 years between them. They look like they're like 2 decades apart. So she just was 16 in this movie. And she's good in it. She's very good in this movie. And I mean, if you look at her, like Pirates of the Caribbean, she was a teenager.
Yeah.
She was like 17 in that, is that right? And, you know, what an incredible actress. I don't think she gets enough credit. Because I think people just look at her and go like, oh, she's pretty. So she gets roles because she's pretty.
Yeah.
But she's really good. I watched a series with her in it recently called Black Doves, where she plays like a secret agent for the MI5 or whatever. I don't know, like British intelligence. I think she's like an assassin. So she's not even working for the government or for MI5. She's working for like an assassin organization. But deep undercover. And she's incredible in it. What a good actress. Anyway, I just thought it was funny that there's like a 10-year age gap between them. And you wouldn't necessarily think that looking at them.
Yeah. It's also, it's where they get women and have the male love interest is always like quite a big gap.
Oh, with the male love interest?
Yeah.
I think Jonathan Rhys-Meyers at this point was in his early 20s, so I think he was significantly older than Keira Knightley, but actually younger than, I think he's younger than Parminder Nagra. So he was, kind of between their ages. But also, it is inappropriate that she's, like, trying to date the coach.
Yeah.
Also
the fact that, like, it's mentioned early on in the movie that if he ends up doing anything with any of his, that he's, like, literally banned for life.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, like, which makes sense.
Yes.
Because it's very, could be a very predatory, like.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Placement. That certain men, I'm not saying all, but certain people in general would seek out, like, places of power. Like, Sting, for an example.
Like Sting, for example.
Yeah.
Classic Predator.
Yeah, classic Predator Sting. We saw
himself to Humbert from Lolita in one of his own songs.
Yeah.
As he referred, the line is just like that old man in that book by Nabokov.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're kind of like dancing around the subject here, but you are comparing yourself to a pedophile. Anyway. Yeah, classic Predator Gordon Sumner.
Yeah.
And then the podcast gets shut down because we're sued for libel, for slander.
It's his song. He wrote it.
Yep.
It's about being a teacher and not wanting to be around young students because he can't control his temptation.
Yeah.
He was a teacher before he was a famous singer.
I know.
There's no defamation. He wrote the song. No one listens to the lyrics. It got popular. People still listen to it now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good song.
Oh, my God. But stalking his ex-wife?
Yeah, he's written a song about stalking his ex-wife. We all sing it.
Yeah.
We all love it.
What are your favorite hobbies? I like swimming. Well, what about you? I like stalking. No, it's the other way around. I like stalking. What about you? I like swimming. Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, it's these movies are both fun and kind of heartwarming and kind of tear-jerky, and it feels like, well, obviously one did way better than the other because I happened to scroll past the money aspect of it.
And yet that's the one that's lower rated.
Yeah.
Of the two.
But, you know, that doesn't always mean that people don't make bank out of
Go buy DVD copies of Whip It. Yeah. I don't know, like... I feel like we have danced around what the plot is. People know, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, these are, you know, about teenage girls who
young person who wants to do something different in their life, who has a bit of a rebellious streak against either their family traditional values and their culture,
mm-hmm.
finds out they're good at a thing, like really good at a thing,
yeah.
and then hides the fact that they're doing that thing from their parents, lies about it, gets caught, and then the dad ends up supporting them after finding out how good they are.
Going and, like, watching... So in Beckham, the dad realizes she's lied and that she's gone to play a match, and then he doesn't tell her that he's realized. He just goes to the match and watches it, and then, like, everyone's cheering for her, and he's like, oh, I can clap along with this. Whereas in Whippet, he, like... Googles her.
Yeah.
And then he's like, whoa. Like, he's really impressed by what his daughter is like.
And then the big final is booked on the same day as another event that they're required to go to.
Yeah.
And then it is the, oh no, will I, won't I? I end up doing it anyway because of the support of my friends, and they end up like...
Yeah.
Well, in the case of Bennett, like Beckham, they end up winning and then getting scholarships to go to the States to play in the American League of Women's Football.
Yeah.
But in Whippet, they, spoilers, lose and on the guides of like, we'll come back stronger next year and we'll beat you.
But the fact of the matter is, before she was in the team, and it's not just about her, it's also that the coach finally convinced him to actually listen to him.
Yeah.
That they consistently lost all their matches.
Yeah.
And that with her on the team and with them actually paying attention to the coach and them actually like putting in the work together, they get to the championship finals. So it's like, we didn't win the finals, but it's incredible that we got here, you know? And the fact that she kind of, you know, befriends and I think slightly flirts with Iron Maiden from the other team who do win. When she's like, Maven's saying to her, like, oh, that was impressive. She's like, maybe I'll show you how to do it sometime. And you're just like, oh, maybe you will. But that would be inappropriate because there's like a 20-year age gap there.
Yeah.
But
it would be only appropriate if Iron Maiden was played by a man character.
Yeah, because Iron Maiden is 36, which is the age Juliette Lewis actually was.
Yeah.
Whereas Elliot Page... his character, Bliss, I had forgotten her name, is 17, and Elliot Page was 22 at the time. Which is funny, because Bliss lies about her age and says she's 22, which is the age that he actually was at the time.
Yeah.
So, weird. But, that would have been an inappropriate relationship. But I do, but, like, it seemed to me like it was flirty.
Yeah.
But, I think I really like both these movies. Genuinely. And I'm not a sports person. But, like, there's just...
Go sports.
Go sports ball. but it's just, like, it's this, you know... And in both cases, they have their cake and eat it, too. Because they don't lose their biological family. They do come together with them. And in both cases, there's... In Benedict Beckham, it's the coach. And in Whippet, it's Maggie Mayhem. People who have conversations with them where they're like, hey, I went through this same kind of phase and I lost my family over it.
Yeah.
You know, even though it seems like they're being really harsh on you, you are lucky to have a family that actually care this much about you.
Yeah.
And you should try to meet them halfway, or, you know, and it's like, you shouldn't give up on your dream and you shouldn't give up on doing this thing, but you should respect your parents and try to actually talk to them. You know, and in Whippet, she kind of treats it like Maggie Mayhem's being a buzzkill, but then does accept it. But yeah, so in both cases they have that, but they do ultimately come together with their family and are happy with them. But they also have this found family who makes them feel like they're the person that they always wanted to be.
Yeah.
That they felt like they couldn't be under the influence of their biological family. And the societal and cultural pressures that they were put under to be this kind of performative feminine version of themselves that didn't fit in with how they felt.
It's also on that thing of not fitting in, we're at a weird period of time now,
mm-hmm.
because the availability of people watching and becoming fans of sports that aren't mainstream,
yep.
is so easy. But the funding and the support and obviously, you know, sponsorships aren't there for a lot of these niche sports. And it's, you know, there's been an ongoing debate about women's and men's football and the differences in pay. And, you know, it's the brutal breakdown is the fact that there's no sponsorship because not enough people watch it.
Yeah.
So the people trying to make it something about... what it's not, which is just the fact that it doesn't have enough visibility.
Yeah.
And if people were more positive and sharing, like, I always preferred women's combat sports over men's.
Yeah.
Because you just get some sort of genetic freak man out there who just dominates the league for, like, you know, years.
Right.
And with women, it was very, very high turnover. Back when I supported UFC, for an example.
Mm. And I said it to you about the, you know, the depiction of the female football players in Benedict Beckham, that, like, something that seems to be true across women's sports everywhere.
Mm.
You know, that there's a moment where one of them gets injured and is bleeding and just wipes the blood off and keeps going.
Oh, yeah. I've seen footage of, like, women's football, like professional football.
Yeah, yeah.
And those ladies are ruthless.
Oh, yeah. Women's rugby is crazy.
Yeah.
And then whereas with men, I mean, not so much in the rugby, but certainly in men's, like, professional football, they'll, like, someone will bump them lightly and they'll lie on the ground rolling around crying about it.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, okay, we get it. Just get up and play the game.
Yeah. It's very funny because obviously this has become, like, have you seen any footage of Vinnie Jones, the actor, when he played football?
I'm aware of him, probably.
But he was an absolute ruthless piece of shit.
Oh, yeah?
There was a highlight video I watched a few years mm-hmm. back. Me and Jim James used to watch it quite regularly.
Yeah. You
know, someone would pull out the phone and should, like, put the video up on the desk and watch it. And it was just literally him coming out of, like, off-screen. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the camera filming the guy with the ball, and then all of a sudden just Vinnie Jones would fly horizontally feet first into some dude's chest and be like, what, that was a legal tackle, and argue with the ref.
Yeah.
It was like the amount of action heroes, like tough guy action heroes, yeah. that played sports. Like, do you know Jason Statham used to be like a professional diver?
No, that makes sense to
like
me.
High dive?
I can see that. Yeah.
So, like, most people don't know. Yeah, it's super funny, but it's just like, yeah, that, and then we've sort of got to the point where, like, I think it was an All Black, so the national rugby team of New Zealand, for those who don't know what All Blacks are, was criticised because he was wearing mascara, like guy liner,
right,
when playing, and it's just very funny because you sort of get this more, you know, the strong, you know, tough, square jaw, big head kind yep. of, you know, male, masculine, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to go grab a piece of leather and run at other mm-hmm. men that also weigh as much as I do, and I'm like 200 kgs, you know, that kind of like thing switching into this very like open to more people based on talent rather than just like, you know, this is the generic, you go to school, you play rugby, you hope you get selected, blah, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Destroy your body for the other people's entertainment, modern gladiators. And yeah, with like you said with the football, and it's like it's getting to the point where it's very much like someone will flick somebody else's ear and roll on the ground.
Yeah.
I've seen like, what was it? A ref bumped somebody. Mm-hmm. And they were screaming like their back was broken. It's yeah. like, you can't disqualify me.
Yeah.
Like, you bumped into me, buddy.
Whereas in women's sports in general, it's crazy. And that's, I feel like that's why roller derby is so much dominated by women. Because there are men's roller derby and like mixed roller derby, but it's very much a women's sport still. And it's a part of that, I think, is that like women are just tougher in sport. No offense. But like, because you got to be tough in that sport. Like, you see that in Whippet, that like the first time she gets knocked, they're like, no, you got to be able to just take that and get back up. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, there's no place for you in this sport. It is a contact sport. It is a full contact sport. And you have to expect that you are going to get a hit. And there's like, you know, the joke of Smash Lee Simpson, you know, Drew Barrymore's character will get like fouled or whatever, and then she'll just like grab the person and start beating them up. And it's just like, okay, stop it. And then they'll still continue to play. I will say, I was scrolling down because I knew I took down some quotes from the movies, and they're not all that important, but there was just, you know, in terms of like in Brenda Like Beckham, there was a moment where the mother was saying, about, so this is Jules's mother talking about Jules, saying no boy is going to want to go out with a girl who's got bigger muscles than him.
Yeah.
So again, it's into this like performative femininity, like you've got to look attractive to men. That's your sole
purpose
is to look attractive to men. You know, and it's like, why would you want to play sport when men don't find that attractive? Which is crazy to me. Yeah. Like, why? That shouldn't be what it's about.
Yeah, but that's the point. That a lot of them, and the point of the reason why we're doing this episode now. Yeah. Maybe you're not trying to attract men, mom.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the other quote that I had taken down, I've taken out a few quotes, but the other one that I want to talk about is, from Whippet, but there is a comparable moment in Bend It Like Beckham, and the comparable moment in Bend It Like Beckham is during the sisters' wedding, because as we mentioned, the sisters' wedding ends up happening on the same day as the finals, so she goes to the wedding instead of going to the finals, and her dad then comes to her, and because her friend shows up who has come out to her as gay, and not to anyone else, even though he then like tries to like propose to her so that her parents will let her go to America, but her friend comes to her and is like, you know, the game has started, but we can still get you there for the second half, or whatever. Like, if we go now, no one's gonna notice you're gone because they're all, you know, enjoying the party. And her dad comes out and is like, because she says no, and then her dad comes out and he's like, you should go. And then she's like, what do you mean? And he says, so I didn't take down this quote, but it's along the lines of like, if this is the only way I will see you smile on the day of your sister's wedding, I want you to go do it.
Yeah.
And the quote from Whippet is when, like this, you know, the pageant is on the same day as the thing, and she's getting ready for the pageant, and the dad brings the team along to send them in to get her, and he goes and talks to her mom, and her mom is saying, you know, her mom is arguing, like, but we just bought this custom-made dress, it cost $800, and the dad says, I can take losing the money, I cannot take losing the chance for our kid to be happy.
Yeah.
And in both cases, it's the dad doesn't really understand, and then he comes around to it, but in both cases, the dad is just very focused on being like, actually, we are making our child miserable, and we need to not do that.
Yeah.
Because the truth of the matter is, you know, in both of these kids are still living, you know, they're teenagers, they're still living with their parents, they're under that roof. But if you, as a parent, make your child totally miserable, don't let them be who they are, don't support them when they show you who they are, you know, in both cases, they're like not, they're, you know, they're putting so much pressure on their kids that their kids can't feel, or feel like they can't tell them who they are. And then when they finally do, or the parents find out, they're reacting negatively to it. Which is very much a story a lot of queer people will relate to, that like you have this fear of, even if you think your parents are accepting, you have this fear of, I can't tell them about who I am and how I feel because then they'll reject me.
Yeah.
And then for a lot of people, when the parents find out or when they tell them, they are rejected.
Yeah.
And in so many ways. And it very much is this moment of realizing, if we continue down this path, if we continue to make our child miserable and tell her that she can't be who she is because she has to be who we want her to be, all that's going to happen is the second she moves out of this house, we are never going to see or hear from this child again.
Yeah.
And that is a reality for a lot of people. And I think an important moment in both these movies that they have the parents recognize and go, we need to let this, you know, this is a young person. This isn't just like, you know, a vessel we can put all our wishes into. This is person with her own thoughts, her own beliefs, her own everything. And if we don't nurture that, and if we force her into this box she doesn't fit in, we lose her entirely.
Yeah.
And that comes, and I mean, you know, trigger warning, that comes in a lot of ways, and sometimes is that you lose the child because the child commits suicide.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there is such an elevated rate of suicide among queer youth.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important message that both these movies have, and I do think that Whippet makes it more expressly, because in Bend It Like Beckham, yes, that's the point they're making, but he still is kind of like jokey, like, you know, oh, if this is the only way you'll smile on your sister's wedding day.
Yeah.
Whereas in Whippet, he like outright says, you know, I don't care about losing $800. I care about not losing our child, essentially. Yeah. And what he says is losing the chance to see our kid happy.
Mm.
But, you know, the writing is on the wall there, that what he means is we're going to lose this child if we don't support her.
You want to move on to some facts?
Yeah, sure. I feel like we covered a lot of them. I didn't really have much for Whippet, so I will just say, yeah, the only other thing that I had for Whippet was that it is Drew Barrymore's feature film directorial debut, yep, even though she'd been acting in film since she was 5. For Bend It Like Beckham, so first of all, Paminder Nagra, who was cast as Jess, was worried that the scar on her leg would prevent her from getting the role of Jess, and instead that they wrote the scar and the story behind it into the script. So that is the story of her childhood and how she got that scar. She also, in 2002, won the FIFA Personality of the Year Presidential Award.
Interesting.
She beat out established players like Luis Figo, I don't know who that is, and Ronaldo, who I have heard of. And she was the first female to ever receive that honor. So she was FIFA's International Football Personality of the Year Presidential Award winner of 2002. And the first woman to ever get that. So that's fun. In this movie about female football, where they criticize the fact that there is no professional football in the UK for women at that time,
yeah,
and that they have to go to the United States to do professional football. That the actress who played one of the characters was won a FIFA award. For the wedding scenes, they didn't hold a casting session for extras.
Yeah.
They just sent out an invitation to the Hounslow Sikh community to say, just come along to this, because they were worried. And then even at that, they were worried they wouldn't get enough people interested.
Yeah.
And the morning that they shot the wedding scenes, they had so many people turn up that they had to turn people away.
Oh, wow.
So all of the extras in those scenes are wearing their own clothes, and the only scripted moments are scenes with the actors. Everything else is just the actual Sikh community from that area, which is kind of cool.
You know, they did that for, you know, in The Matrix.
Yeah.
When we eventually cover The Matrix.
Which I would love to do as a Pride episode, yeah, but I'd need something. If anyone knows a, like, explicitly trans movie we can compare The Matrix to, please let me know.
Yeah. The scene in the nightclub that he goes out to.
Yeah.
They were just, like, actors that they just asked to turn up at a place in Sydney with their own clothes.
Right.
So that none of them are, like, in costume. They're just, like, all
extras. Yeah, just in their clothes.
Yeah, just out there having a rave.
That's fun. So this is just fun because someone put this in as an IMDb trivia fact, and I think they're a hater because they said that a rumor regarding the film purports that by the end of the movie, Jess and Jules were originally supposed to become a couple. However, no iteration of Skipped has the two ever romantically paired. It's like, yeah, sure, sure. Mentioned, oh, so it was actually during the audition phase. So Joe was written as an English character rather than Irish.
Yep.
But Jonathan Rhys Meyers improvised a line during his audition comparing discrimination faced by South Asians in England to the Irish. And that's why they A, cast him, and B, decided to make the character Irish. And then the other thing I wrote down was Bend It Like Beckham has been favorably received by LGBTQ+ community members and press. And this was where there was a reviewer from Vice noted that it has discussions of queer themes and symbolic queer undertones, and that Keira Knightley had told Pride Source that she wants a Bend It Like Beckham lesbian sequel, and she agreed that her character and Parminder's character should have ended up together at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of do. They don't end up together, but they do, like, leave the families and the... you know, the guy in the love triangle and go off together to America to get scholarships together. So, absolutely, you could do a sequel where they're together. Please. Keira Knightley wants to do it. Someone finance this. I want to see...
Drew Barrymore, finance this. Yeah,
Drew Barrymore, please produce this movie. They go to America, Drew. Anyway, that's all I had there. I'll touch on the budget and box office. So for Whippet, the budget was $15 million.
Yep.
And the box office, 16. Global, $16.7 million.
Yep.
So that's very sad Whippet. And genuinely very sad because it's such a good movie.
Yeah, with such a great cast.
Incredible cast.
Yeah.
And just really good movie. Whereas Bend It Like Beckham, the budget was $6 million. And at box office it made $76.5 million.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I genuinely watched Bend It Like Beckham in school. I remember it. Like, I distinctly remember watching it. We had, like, a little prefab building and we watched it out there, and I don't remember why. I don't remember why we were, because we did, I didn't have class in that prefab building very much. And I don't remember why Bend It Like Beckham would have been a movie that we were watching.
I was going to say you were just probably scooching, but that's not the Irish term for wagging.
Mitching.
Mitching.
No, mitching and watching Bend It Like Beckham in a prefab outside my school. I don't know. Because my memories of being... Because I genuinely didn't really have class in that prefab building. And the only memories I have in there were... That was where we got our HPV vaccines. I watched Bend It Like Beckham there, and I had, like, a choir practice there once, and that's my only memories of there. And I don't know why, like, was Bend It Like Beckham on when we were getting our vaccines? Probably not. But these have just, like, combined in my mind. It's like, these are the things I did in this little prefab. I assume just it was just
real well, or they give you the big needle, and then you have to wait the 15 minutes watching
Bend It Like Beckham.
Bend It Like Beckham.
I assume it was just, like, that we had a free, like, our teacher was sick and our sub just put us out there or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't remember why that was happening.
I think then, we watched Reindeer Games when that happened to me.
Right.
And that movie is awful.
I think it could have been, because my classroom burned down at one point. So maybe we were in the prefab while my classroom was burned down. Not, like, while it was being burned down.
Yeah,
What it was burnt down during midterm break at Halloween. Someone threw, like, a firework or something like that.
Okay.
It was very sad because we had just done a school project on different dog breeds. And they were just, like, up around the wall. But it was in time of, you know, it was early enough that most people didn't have digital cameras.
Right.
So, like, there were people had used their actual photographs.
Oh,
of
wow.
Their dogs that had passed away or whatever.
Jeez.
And lost all their photos of their dogs because of the... Yeah. And I had pictures I used. I did it on a Whippet. Because that was what my cousin's dog supposedly was. That dog was way too big to be a Whippet. But I think they were the photos I had in there were some of the only photos of her with four legs. Because she... Earlier that same year. Or no, maybe it was the next... Because I think it was early in the year, so it must have been like a couple of months later. She was hit by a car and ended up getting a leg amputated.
Being a tripod.
Yeah, well, the decision was, you know, either put her down or amputate the leg. And then they decided to amputate.
Why is that a decision?
Well, because they didn't think she'd have much quality of life as a like, sight hound with three legs. But she was, like, less than 2 years old at that point. Yeah, yeah. And then she ended up being 16 when she passed away. So they made the right decision to amputate, I think, even though it was more expensive. She was a lovely dog. She was very nice.
Anyway, on that note, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it. It does more than you could possibly imagine. If each person just shared it with one other person, listened, it would literally double. Like, that's double, folks.
Yeah.
Double how many people have listened to this podcast or just this episode. Or if you liked another episode, share that one instead.
Yeah. Also, like, if... you haven't, and most people haven't, because it's only a few people have. If the place that you are listening to this gives you the ability to leave a review, leave a review. Yeah. It would be lovely. We'd love to hear, even like no matter how many stars or what you have to say, we would love to hear it.
Yeah, one star. I've never heard of either of these movies.
Yeah. We haven't had a review in like 3 years, wow. I think. Please review our podcast. Yeah. We love podcast review.
You can join a bunch of things by going to our website, ittakes2.co.nz. You've got the link to our Discord and the mailing list, which I should probably help with at some point, but not today. thank you for joining us for this episode, and we'll be back next month with more episodes, because that's how a rotating system works. I don't know why I went down that trail in the first place.
We're going to have another episode in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which it's is never a shock happened before. Because we've been doing it every 2 weeks for 4 years.
Yeah.
And if you have more Pride movie suggestions, we'd love to hear them, because I feel like we have a limited number of Pride comparisons to make.
Yeah, it'll be like I think you've got, was it 6 or 7,
like, comparisons?
Yeah,
something like that. But enough for the next 2 to 3 years, I think. Yeah. But then after that, we're gonna struggle.
Yeah,
but then again, maybe more movies will come out in the meantime, or I'll make more connections, more galaxy brain connections between things, going like, oh, these are the same.
Yeah,
and like I said, you know, I would love to do The Matrix as a Pride episode with another, you know, queer film or film about being trans. But we'll see if I can find one that I can do that with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.